I'm gonna go to the hospital. my goodness. This is not quite ready for primetime technology, apparently. I've got this window open and I can't get away from it. We still can't get Brian on. Once more, into the breach. Howdy. Greg Swan from selfadoration.com. This is the second attempt at his precast on Wednesday, June the 6th. I started earlier and we had technical difficulties on our end, and so the whole thing ended up getting truncated. When I post this, I will post both of these recordings, and unfortunately you'll have to pursue one and then the other in order to get to the whole thing. Brian Brady is on deck down there, and there he is. He has made a request to come out of standby mode, and I'm going to put him on right now. Oh, my goodness, he's outdoors. Brian is in San Diego, where the sun shines all the time. Well, I've got a preview of him. Brian, can you hear me? Maybe you can and maybe you can't. Let's... Clearly, I don't know what I'm doing. Ah! All this thing wants to do is move around. And I just want Brian to come live and in person. Oh my goodness. This is not quite ready for primetime technology, apparently. I've got this window open and I can't get away from it. We still can't get Brian on. Putting him into producer mode, and maybe that will make this thing go away. At last, yay. And now we can try to put Brian on and see if he will show up. This is what we were attempting to do before when everything collapsed on us. Oh, Brian's video is not... Oh, no, okay. Brian's video is back live. Let's see. Oh, here, maybe he's going to show up for us. Yeah. Brian Brady, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can. You are very much in shadow. Your video image you're in silhouette.
That's better here.
The trouble is that the skylight is so strong behind you. It is better there as you back up.
Okay. That better now?
Yeah, it is. It's excellent. We can't see your radiant Irish beauty.
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. It was more than just
me.
We had a great
victory
with about four Ron Paul people and about a dozen Tea Party people.
Excellent. And trimming back on public employee pensions?
Really,
San Diego
was big. We had Carl DeMaio, who's our mayoral candidate, who wrote the comprehensive pension reform plan. He won. He's going to go to the runoff against a far-left, near-socialist
Congressman
Bob Filner for
mayor.
And then, of course, the city of San Diego, taxpayers decided by 2-1 to pass pension reform, which is going to get rid of defined benefit plans and put public employees on 401k-type plans, just like you and me and everybody else.
But 2-1?
Yeah, it passed with 67% and only 33% opposed it.
That's very impressive.
And like you said on the last podcast, you had a remarkable amount of union members that actually voted for this.
So there's hope.
Yeah, it is. It's really very impressive to me. And it's just kind of across the nation, everywhere that people voted yesterday, they voted in ways that there's a whole lot more that I want, but I'm willing to take a little compared to nothing or, moving in the opposite direction. If we can do anything to deflate this monster, I'm in favor of it, even if it's just a tiny little slow leak at first, because this is how we got ourselves into this trouble. I mean, we did this over the course of 100 years, really. I mean, I would cite the Civil War as a breaking point for the United States. Even before then, lots of rent-seeking legislation, especially at the state level in the 1830s and 1840s. But the growth of the monster state, the Leviathan state, really started in the Progressive Era. So, you know, to pick a date, I would say 1912. That's the Federal Reserve Act. That's the 16th Amendment, the income tax. That was when the federal government
brutal
decided
year.
That
brutal
it,
year.
What's up? Horrible, terrible. I mean, you know,
1913 year for liberty.
Yeah. Yeah, 1913, 1916, these are all, 1908 was the National Association of Realtors. And this is, again, we don't associate this with the progressive movement, but that's the NAR is part of the progressive movement. That's the, what they came out of was this belief that government could somehow make human lives better. And we've spent 100 years and billions, trillions of dollars proving that government makes just about everything worse.
And yet we've been prosperous.
And I'll tell you why. I'll name three heroes of the last century, and two of them are union men. The three heroes that I would pick out accounting for American prosperity are Henry Ford, George Meany, and Walter Reuther. Henry Ford the assembly line technique. The assembly line so massively increased the productivity of the individual labor. And this is von Mises. This is straight out of Austrian economics that, number one, the wealth of a civilization is the gross capital investment divided by the number of people. But the other way of thinking about wealth and productivity is how much wealth can I produce in a day of my life, in a day of my time. And the more wealth that I can produce, the more wealth that any individual person can produce in a day of labor, that is how wealthy that person is going to be going forward, or how wealthy the aggregate of people living in that civilization are going to be going forward. And so Ford massively increased the productivity of everybody who worked in the United States. And it wasn't just Ford, there was other people too, but the assembly line technique massively increased the productive power of the factories of the United States. And then I cited George Meany and Walter Reuther, and why did I pick those two? The reason is because they kept the communists out of the labor movement. And if you look at the experience of the United States after World War I and after World War II and compare it with the economic experience of England, the country that we're most like in the world, why did England fare so much worse? Why are the English so much poorer now? It's because they had communists running their labor unions, and George Meany and Walter Reuther kept the communists out of the labor unions of the United States. And that really is kind of sick. Because as far as I'm concerned, labor unions are criminal. They're criminal in every respect, but American labor unions were less criminal than European labor unions, and Americans are richer in consequence. That's just funny.
Well, I think American labor unions...
Well, I think American labor unions...
In principle, are fine.
In principle, are fine.
There's nothing wrong with people getting
and
together
associating.
And it's when they started to use force, i.e. the Wagner Act.
Right, exactly.
They became rent-seekers at that point, or that which is a labor monopoly. And Meany understood one distinction, that public employee unions...
Public employee unions...
Negotiating...
Elected officials.
It's a conflict of interest.
And nobody looks back on Meany's words.
I think we're finally understanding now.
Yeah, and actually, this is talking about Scott Walker in Wisconsin. This is of the changes that Walker made. The changes that he actually made in the benefits being paid to the school teachers are pretty marginal. They're pretty minor. But the big change he made was getting the state out of the business of collecting the union dues. And he put the collection of union dues back on the union and made membership in the union voluntary, and something like 20% of the members of the Wisconsin Education Association, or whatever their union is, something like 20% of them dropped out. And so the benefit, frankly, going forward is he's robbing that union of their ability to buy future elections. And that's, of course, what they were really fighting about anyways. They were literally fighting for their survival. So you won your election last night. Did you stay up all night drinking and partying with your fellow candidates?
I didn't. We actually, in San Diego,
Election
Central down at Golden Hall, which is in principle, this nice idea. Everybody gets down and votes by the dial, watch the results together, they shake hands. And it's kind of a party atmosphere.
Party atmosphere.
We went down there with my wife Deborah and my daughter Maggie and let her see it. And then about midnight, we went home. I stayed up for another couple hours to make sure that 100% of the precincts were counted.
And so this morning, a representative from the California Association of Plumbers showed up at your house and sold you an S-Class Mercedes for $12.97. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say that he sold it to me. I would say that he leased it to me for $12 a month. You know, it's interesting because during the campaign, the rent seekers come out. All of a sudden, the political consultants start wondering, jostling for who's going to be on the central committee, because one of the things we do is endorse. So, you know, it starts off nicely, like, hey, good luck on your campaign. And, you know, last night at Golden Hall, it was, oh, I'm so glad you performed well. But I'd like to think we have an uncorruptible group of people. We'll see how it works moving forward.
The joke is, when they come to sell you that car for $12.97, your answer is, you know, at that price, I think I'll take two.
Yeah, right, seven.
This is one of my concerns, and we've talked about this before. This is one of my concerns for you know, reform-minded people in general. It doesn't really have to be like Tea Party people, because I lived in New York for 10 years, and in New York they called them goo-goos. The Tammany machine is still very strong in New York. The Democratic Party controls the city of New York, controls really New York State politics. But every once in a while they go so overboard with their corruption that a reform slate can get elected, and it's a Republican slate because the Republican Party is the only alternative in Manhattan. But they call them goo-goos, good government goo-goos. And the unfortunate thing is, you know, they get elected on this reform platform that we're going to clean up City Hall, and then they get elected and, like Schwarzenegger, discover that they can't actually accomplish anything, and they end up looking very, very bad. And so you'll have one goo-goo administration every 20 years or so. And they'll last for one term, 2 years or 4 years, whatever is the length of the term, and then Tammany Hall is back in control again. But one of the concerns that I have for Tea Party-type candidates, or, you know, libertarian candidates, Ron Paul-style candidates, you pick it, is simply insiderism, is that once you're on the inside, things change. And it's not just, you know, rent seekers offering to sell you Mercedes at remarkably low prices. It doesn't have to involve real outright corruption. I mentioned in one of my video casts a few weeks ago the phenomenon of the family that we find in groups of people like the Jesuits, that the brothers all live together and they live together like a family, and they come to identify with each other, and they, you know, it's all for one and one for all, and it works for us. Why won't it work for you? The same kind of thing happens when you take a seat on a city council or something like that. All of a sudden you get to know these people and you like them. And, you know, most people are cordial. They're easy to get along with. They're fun. They have good stories to tell. They're good dinner guests. They're good hosts. You become friends with them. And you may not share a political ideology with each other, but you're able to talk with these people and they're able to talk with you, and they're able to persuade you that, oh, that's not that big a deal. You can go along with this. You go along with this. I'll go along with that. That kind of, and that's cronyism, literally cronyism, but there's no real corruption involved in it. It's not like anyone is taking any money, but it's just the kind of casual corruption of cordiality that goes along with having social relationships with people, regular, frequent contact with people that you don't despise. If you despise them, it's easy to oppose them. But if they're friendly, if they're a hell fellow well met,
yeah, the rhetoric becomes much less sharp. The rhetoric is less sharp when you see a man's face.
Sharp when you see a man's face.
And that's a challenge. I'll give you a good example.
That's a challenge. I'll give you a good example.
I have a friend in Orange County who
just got voted out of
his Orange County GOP Central Committee. And it's because he did a job. I mean, he went in there in 2008 with the same ideas that I have going in today.
And he organized a group of people, and they would not endorse a sitting congressman for voting for TARP.
Very basic Tea Party type principle. he did go against the stream.
He did go against
and,
the stream.
As he was going down, all of a sudden, all those that were with him started distancing. Very unfortunately, he lost last night because he is an absolute champion. And knew where he needed to be. Was an old school liberty-minded Republican.
Liberty-minded Republican, and he lost.
Man, it's a shame. That's a shame. But at least he, you know, comes out with his soul intact. He comes out with his, you know, he's not corrupted by the system. I will give you another concern that I have for, you know, that kind of politician, like your kind of politician, the Tea Party libertarian Ron Paul style of politician, is simply the idea of earnest men of goodwill wanting to do the right thing. And they are put in this situation where they have this decision-making authority and they are, you know, being lobbied by, you know, professional lobbyists, but also being lobbied by government employees, by the people who are, you know, department heads who are coming in, making their budget requests, making their legislation requests and things like that. And they say, you know, here's the situation. It's terrible. We need to do something. Something needs to be done. And my attitude toward all government, the only thing that ever needs to be done is cut. If you have one word in your political philosophy and that word is cut, then you will not get sucked into this. But that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is that the people who are getting elected to these positions are going to be presented with some sort of proposal, and they may trim it back or they may modify it or whatever, but they're going to pass legislation. And the legislation, you know, will grow the government. It will. Because that's the only thing that governments do. That's the only thing that organizations do is grow.
It's going to be hard to look back over the last 50, 100 years and point to three pieces of legislation that we can really say were great. I mean, can you?
I'd be hard pressed to put any to come up with anything. Can you?
Right.
I mean, there. Obviously, you can always once you. Throw crime out the window. As soon as you say, "Oh well, we're not going to consider the fact that we were pushing people or innocent people around by force," then you can name all kinds of things that might have been good. I mean, like a red light camera. The red light camera saves lives. Well, the real issue is why does the state own the roads? I don't care how the owner of the road manages his traffic flow, provided that he's an entrepreneur and provided that he has liability. And that's what we get with government-owned roads, among many other things, including potholes and fatality accidents, et cetera. One of the things we get is no one to sue. That if the road is improperly managed and results in fatalities, there's no one to sue, again, because of the doctrine of sovereign immunity, that this is the government doing what it's paid to do. Whereas if the road were privately owned, exactly like a mall, I mean, you have a slip and fall on a city sidewalk, good luck to you. You have a slip and fall at the mall, then you just got a paycheck. And you don't even have to sue for it. There's somebody from mall management right there saying, if I write you a check right now, will you waive your right to sue?
I'll give you another good example of bad legislation.
Bad legislation.
Here in California, AB 2299. It passed unopposed.
It passed
Sides of the aisle.
True bipartisanship.
All public safety officials will now not have their real estate
transactions recorded.
What was the rationale for this? For vendettas, crazy people out there that stalk them and demonstrate in front of their house. And this is how you get Duke Cunningham.
You remember Duke Cunningham?
He was our former congressman, a hero. I looked up to Duke Cunningham, Vietnam War vase, wonderful guy.
Conservative type politician.
Quite literally committed treason by choosing certain military technology to rise. And we found that out through regular real estate transactions. So we're now going to give them sovereign immunity. We can't even find the corruption.
Or certainly not the evidence of it. That's interesting. And does that cover all real estate transactions, not just their own personal residence?
I think it's just their own personal residence.
I knew about that with Arpaio.
Just to give you an example.
Yeah, I mean, what we have with Duke Cunningham He was selling a house.
He was selling a house
for more money than it was
for
worth.
More money than it was worth.
And buying another house for less money.
Another house for less money than it was.
And all of a sudden, you know, there's some backroom deal. The seller and the buyer got.
The buyer got.
It turns out that they were connected to
defense contractors.
We wouldn't have known that if we had not seen this
regular real estate transaction.
Hillary Clinton made 10 perfect trades. 10 perfect trades that she could have won or lost on each one of them. This is a 1,023-1 against is the odds. And so she made 10 perfect trades.
Commodities trades.
Yeah, yeah. She made 10 perfect trades and then went and bought a lottery ticket with the proceeds because she was so damn lucky. But really, seriously, the person who paid the bribe, that's a criminal. The person who took the bribe, he's a criminal, yes. The real issue is the fact that there's something for sale. If there were nothing for sale, the bribe could not take place. And that is my answer to all of this is cut. I have a list of cuts if you're interested. Shall I read it to you? Are you not hearing me? This is my list of cuts, and this is my Tea Party agenda. And obviously I'm not going to join the Tea Party because I don't go to meetings. Glenn Harlan Reynolds, the Instapundit, had a post up at the Washington Examiner last night saying that the members of the Tea Party discovered that going to meetings is fun. And I'm scared to death of anybody who likes to go to meetings. There's nothing but crime comes out of meetings. But my Tea Party agenda consists of the word cut, period. Just cut, or if you want, cut, which I like too. That's to reinforce it three times. But here's my list of cuts. Cut spending, cut taxes, cut regulation, cut government staffing, cut the property that government owns, owned property, real estate, and chattels, and vehicles, and especially weapons, and cut red tape. And if the Tea Party devotes itself to doing nothing but cutting, I will have no objection whatever. I will have no problem with them whatever. Certainly that hasn't happened so far in the class of 2010 in Congress. And we'll see what happens. The beautiful news from the election last night is that the congressional elections in November could be really, really interesting. But I love the idea of cutting. That's my agenda.
We've talked about this before, especially where it relates to occupational licensing.
Occupational licensing, the untold prosperity, cutting an infinitive half again. We don't even have to get to this if a physician is licensed or not. We can just start with hairdressers, right? And plumbers and bricklayers and accountants. I mean, you know, you work your way up, and frankly, starting at the bottom makes perfect sense.
Real estate salespeople.
What? Real estate salespeople. And lenders, for that matter, too.
Right.
And, you're counting the pennies that we're leaving on the table. You're counting the chips that we're leaving on the table by this regulation, and that's valuable. That's valid. But what we can't count is the innovation that doesn't happen because of this licensing. Things could be radically different. Like real estate is a very good example. What are the real estate licensees really for? They exist to prevent competition from companies like Redfin, to keep higher technology, more efficient, more productive players out of the marketplace. And if we repeal this legislation, the professional crybabies in the media will readily assert that, number one, they'll hypothesize all kinds of crimes that aren't happening. Kathleen heard this on NPR or something like that, talking about licensing of florists in one state or another, that the florists are required to get licenses. And they asked some legislator, you know, what possible benefit could there be to licensing florists? And the guy said, well, what if somebody is using poison dirt? And the reporter didn't have the brains to say, has anybody ever been convicted of using poison dirt? Do you have any evidence that anybody ever used poison dirt? What the hell is poison dirt in the first place? How do you poison dirt? Didn't ask any of those questions, but it's just, you know, hypothesizing this demon-haunted world where unbelievable completely incredible, impossible things happen, and we have to legislate against them. And if we don't legislate against them, that can happen at any second. So if, you know, as soon as we start having this conversation, those kind of stories will come out. The newspaper loves that kind of stuff anyway. But the fact of the matter is, if you get rid of, right now, there are crimes occurring, for instance, in the real estate market or every other licensed occupation. There are crimes occurring. And if that, you know, nobody reports those stories now. And in most cases, they aren't litigated because nobody brings suits about them. These are suits that have to show up in civil court anyway. Oh, I lost Brian. We'll see if he comes back. After we repeal those kind of licensing laws, then plausibly, presumably, we will see those kind of cases. They will get press attention then. But what you have to do, this is the, you know, the evidence of things not seen. This is the seen and the unseen from Bastiat. If you take note of crimes that are occurring in the marketplace and say, oh, these crimes are terrible, these are awful, we got to do something. Well, in fact, we can do something by means of the civil courts, that these are things that people can bring lawsuits over and can seek redress in the courts. This already exists. We don't need licenses to provide for this because it already exists. Fraud and negligence are already judicable offenses. But even taking account of that kind of stuff, what we don't see, what Bastiat was talking about, the seen and the unseen, what we don't see are the benefits that result from getting the hell out of the way of innovators, getting out of the way of innovation. I don't know if Brian is going to come back or not. If he does, I'll bring him back in. I love what happened yesterday. I'm delighted by it. And I like the trend. I want to see more of it. And the fact is that electoral victories are a wonderful thing. And as I pointed out yesterday, that as these victories accumulate, as we get people taking office who are sincerely trying to cut the size of government, we will see, you know, pushback from the mainstream media, from academia, from government employees, from people who have a vested interest in the Leviathan state, and especially in the welfare state. We will see pushback from them. And again, we need to take account not just of our victories, electoral victories, but also the victories that result from cutting government, the growth in productivity, the increase in wealth, the increase in the number of people who are productively employed. And that doesn't mean just having a job. It means having a job that actually produces wealth. Because if you have a job doing something that destroys wealth, you're destroying wealth twice. Number one, you're destroying wealth while you work. And number two, you're destroying wealth when you collect your paycheck, because somebody who had to produce the wealth that resulted in that paycheck. And so this is doubly destructive. And we need to see more and more and more of this kind of stuff in government, more people voting to cut, and more cuts actually taking place. And therefore, we need to celebrate all of these victories, the electoral victories and the victories that result from cutting all of this stupid waste out of our body politic. But all of this is kind of practical and political. And as always, my argument would be that what's necessary is to evangelize egoism, that the people who are voting for Tea Party-type candidates or Libertarian-type candidates today, the people who are supporting this stuff, understand the political benefits that they're seeking, that they're looking for, and three cheers for them. But in order to persuade the other half of the population to this point of view, or a significant number of them, we need for them to understand why it's a benefit to them. And the pushing the idea, selling the idea of self-adoration is the way that we will do that. That you're not gonna shout down socialism. You're not gonna yell at socialism and make it go away. But you can take an individual person who, for whatever misguided reason, believes that stealing from the innocent and productive people in order to give their wealth to dishonest, unproductive people, that they think that's some sort of benefit, you need for them to be able to understand why the interests that they're damaging are their own interests. It's their own interests, their own family, their own life, their own home, health, wealth, and happiness. that they're destroying. And as soon as they come to understand self-adoration as the cardinal virtue in the uniquely human life, then you don't have to persuade them to support freedom in the polling place, in the electoral booth. They will support freedom because they will understand that that is how they achieve their own values. And really, practically speaking, this is the message that we need to convey to people, is that pursuing your own values is not only politically appropriate, it is morally righteous, it is just, it is perfect. Moral perfection is achieved by correctly identifying yourself and your values and pursuing them avidly, and letting nothing get in the way of your pursuit of your own values, and not letting demagogues gull you into betraying your own values, your own life, your own loves, your own family, your own friends, your own work, your own home, betraying all of those things in pursuit of some demagogue's goals, which he will have sold you as being as some kind of higher moral virtue. It's not. It's crime. And what they're doing is rationalizing crime, and they are roping you in to their criminal conspiracy. And what needs to happen is for you to discover that this is an error, that you have made a mistake, and that you need to correct that mistake. And yesterday, plausibly, possibly, we reversed the direction on the growth of the Leviathan state, that it's possible that yesterday was the first day of the end of big government in the United States. And God help us, I hope it's true. But what I really hope, what I really want, is for yesterday or today to be the first day of the end of big government in your mind. Big government, big religion, big academia, big crime in your mind. And if you renounce that kind of criminal conspiracy in your own mind and resolve instead to pursue your own values and to put nothing before your own values, then you'll be freer, immediately freer, because you will not be chained, you will not be enslaved by these imaginary chains in your mind, but you will be much better equipped to pursue political freedom, economic prosperity, deep and devoted love for your spouse and for your children and for everyone else that you love. You'll be happier at work, you'll be more productive at work, you will be more productive and more thoughtful, more clear-sighted in everything that you do. And then when you achieve that particular miracle, then I want you to turn around and start evangelizing egoism with everyone that you know. And that really is my goal, is to evangelize egoism. I mean, I am a libertarian. I would love to see the Leviathan state shrunk to nothing. And I really, my goal is zero, but I'll get as close to zero as I can. Get me anything closer to zero I like. And that's why I like what happened yesterday, because we moved just a little bit, but we moved a little bit closer to zero. But that's a secondary consequence. That's not really of primary interest to me. What's of interest to me is evangelizing egoism, because if you come to understand self-adoration in the way that I understand it, then together we can achieve anything. Together we can shrink this state down to nothing and get it to the point where we're all so busy getting rich that we don't have time to bitch about anything. I'm grateful to Brian Brady for joining me today. It was a little bit shaky, a little bit hard to hold together, but it worked. And three cheers for the Spreecast, people. I'm really in love with the software, and I recognize that it's, you know, fairly beta, and that it will get better going forward. And I intend to work it to death to see how much better I can make it. But I am deeply grateful to them for making this available to me. I really think this is an impressive technology. I said today on Facebook, why watch TV when you can be TV? And that really is my attitude, and that's what I want to do. And I'm grateful to you for giving me your attention. Thank you so much for being involved with this today. And this will be online forever. As long as I can keep it on my server, it'll be there. So you can revisit it later. And maybe a year from now, you can come back and look at this and either laugh at me or say, hey, wow, Greg Swan accurately predicted the end of big government. I hope that's true. Anyway, thanks so much for your time. I'm really grateful to you for giving me your attention. And I want you to have a wonderful day, not just today, but every day. I want you to have a wonderful day. Thank you so much.